Patent owners need to be wary of the pitfalls when attempting to procure follow-on patents to an existing technology. It could turn out your own patents could be used against other patents in the portfolio to cut short valuable patent term, or even worse, render them entirely invalid. Third parties, on the other hand, should tactically be aware of patent terms and ownership of all related patent assets in a patent owner's portfolio prior to challenging a patent's validity. In Baker Hostetler's inaugural Intellectual Property Perspectives Thought Leadership piece, the Intellectual Property Practice Group highlights myriad IP-related topics that are at the forefront of industry developments, inspired by client wins and current challenges and trends. I'm Leanne Lee, and you're listening to Baker Hosts. On today's episode, we discuss a game-changing precedential ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals of the Federal Circuit in the case of In Re Select and its impact on granted patents. To provide us with insight into this topic, we have Tyann Patel, a partner in the Intellectual Property Group at Baker Hostetler. Tyann is the co-leader of the firm's electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and computer science prosecution team. Tyann's practice focuses on IP-centric transactions and portfolio counseling involving auditing, patent development, monetization, and risk management strategies in multiple industries touching emerging tech, high tech, and the life sciences. Welcome, Tyann.
Hi, Leanne. Great to be here.
Welcome to the show, Tyann. So at a high level, can you explain why the In Re Select ruling is so important?
Sure. Happy to do so. I think the best way to describe this for our audience is to just go through an example. So say a patent applicant files a first patent application with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. After some dealings with the patent office, they successfully obtain a patent. We'll call that patent A. The patent A actually accrues some additional patent term beyond its 20-year term due to some delays caused by the USPTO in getting back to the patent applicant. Now, let's assume that the applicant decides to file what's called a follow-on continuing application with claims that are patentably indistinct from the claims they secured in patent A. This continuing application successfully also issues after some time, but this patent has less or no patent term adjustment. So then the issues are, is the first patent that was secured safe from an obviousness type double patenting challenge in view of the second patent that was secured? Well, under In Re Select, the answer is no. Since the patent that was secured later, which was later filed, expires earlier than the first patent, which is the earlier filed patent, it can be used as a reference patent and used to challenge the life of patent A. Now, what if patent B has expired? Well, then patent A would be invalid in view of the obviousness type double patenting rejection. And a usual measure to get around this issue, which is to file a terminal disclaimer, would not be able to be used against the rejection against patent A.
Great. Can you explain what obviousness type double patenting is?
Sure. Obviousness type double patenting is actually a judicially created doctrine with roots in 35 U.S.C. 101, which indicates that an inventor may obtain a patent for an invention. But note that it's not actually covered under a statute. It was created by judges. And the intention for obviousness type double patenting is to prevent a patentee from obtaining a time-wise extension of a patent for the same invention or an obviousness modification thereof. Generally, the obviousness type double patenting rejection is applied against an application or a patent in a post-grant proceeding in view of a family member based on at least one of the following. It's either that you have a common inventor, at least one, a common applicant, or that there is common ownership.
And exactly how do patent applicants typically deal with obviousness type double patenting rejections?
Typically, applicants will file something called a terminal disclaimer. And generally, what that does is it disclaims any portion of the statutory term that is provided by the Patent Office, which is 20 years. And what it does is it ensures that the second patent doesn't extend beyond the expiration date of the reference patent, or otherwise the patent that's being used to challenge the patent at issue. One important thing to note, though, with terminal disclaimers is that the reference patent needs to be alive and also have common ownership with the challenge patent.
Let's talk about the ruling, and could you walk us through the facts of In Re Select?
Happy to. So Select sued Samsung Electronics for patent infringement of four patents related to image sensors in the U.S. District Court of Colorado. After that, Samsung requested ex parte reexamination of each patent, arguing obviousness type double patenting, and ex parte reexams are conducted at the Patent Office. At the Patent Office, the examiner in charge of the reexams found that the threshold for a substantial new question of patentability was met. Now, in this case, there were four patents that were challenged by patents that granted and that received patent term adjustment or no patent term adjustment, that was meaning that it expired earlier in time than the later patents. And so based on that, the examiner in these re-exams at the Patent Office issued final office actions based on obviousness type double patenting. Subsequently, Select appealed to the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, and at that level, the examiner's determinations were sustained. Select then appealed to the Federal Circuit. At the Federal Circuit, the court looked to the express language and the intent of the statutes governing patent term adjustment, which is caused by USPTO delays, and something a little different, which is called patent term extension, which is provided for regulatory delays in product approvals. What the court found after looking at the statutes for PTA and also PTE is that under Section 154 covering PTA, it discusses terminal disclaimers and its intent to avoid unjust extensions of time for patent families that have overlapping subject matter and with different expiration dates due to patent term adjustment. On the other hand, the statute covering patent term extension was silent on terminal disclaimers. And so based on that, the Federal Circuit in a precedential holding held that obviousness type double patenting for a patent receiving patent term adjustment, regardless of whether a terminal disclaimer is required or filed, must be based on the expiration date after PTA has been added. And that's the sole reason why Select's four patents, which were challenged with patent term adjustments that extended those dates, were invalidated by patents that expired before in the same family.
Now, are there any further challenges or appeals that Select can make?
At this point, post-Select, the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit denied Select's request for a rehearing en banc, which means hearing by all of the judges at the Federal Circuit. And moving forward, the deadline for filing a petition for review by the Supreme Court will be April 18th of this year. To me personally, I feel that there might be a legislative fix that will be proposed in either the House or the Senate at some point this year, but I think that will unlikely gain significant traction, specifically because it is an election year.
And what are some strategies patent owners should consider pre-grant and post-grant?
Sure, great question. Pre-grant, one of the options that patent applicants consider is to pursue separate applications for any claims that are not rejected under obviousness type double patenting. And the reason for this is that this type of rejection is on a claim-by-claim basis. So what some applicants may do is if they do receive this rejection on some claims, they could potentially file a terminal disclaimer to overcome their own prior art. And then the other claims which did not receive that rejection, they can pursue in another case. Alternatively, applicants can argue or amend their claims to make them patentably distinct from a reference patent's claims. And note, the reason why that obviousness type double patenting rejection is brought forth in the first place is because the claims are considered to be somewhat the same or not patentably distinct. Another option is to consider filing terminal disclaimers on the earliest expiring patent in a family, even if an obviousness type double patenting rejection is not asserted by the patent office. And a further option is to consider filing multiple claim types of different embodiments at the beginning of filing an application, so you could take advantage of a particular safe harbor, which would then cause the patent office to indicate that the claims are distinct and restricted. Post-grant, I think that patent owners could consider the possibility of filing a reissue of the earlier expiring patent in an effort to make them patently distinct from the later expiring patent. In addition, post-grant, you could also consider filing a terminal disclaimer in your later expiring patent over the earlier one as a family member in the family, at least for the effect of not invalidating the later expiring patent.
And finally, what are some considerations for those seeking to challenge granted patent portfolios and those interested in challenging patents in view of In Re Select?
Sure. For those that are looking to challenge patents, I think it's really important to understand all of the expiration dates of patents in a family before you pursue an obviousness type double patenting challenge post-grant. In addition, I think it's important for those looking to challenge to understand the legal ownership status of all patents in the family. Sometimes when you've got a complicated family with continuations and continuations in part, certain patent assets end up being owned by a different entity. And remember, for a patent applicant to overcome a double patenting challenge, the one option is a terminal disclaimer. But in order to file that terminal disclaimer, you have to have common ownership of both assets, meaning the patent that is being challenged as well as the reference patent.
This has been a great conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thank you, Tyann. If you have any questions for Tyann, his contact information is in the show notes. For more information on the IP Perspectives Thought Leadership piece, we encourage you to download the document on bakerlaw.com. As always, thanks for listening to Baker Hosts. Comments heard on Baker Hosts are for informational purposes and should not be construed as legal advice regarding any specific facts or circumstances. Listeners should not act upon the information provided on Baker Hosts without first consulting with a lawyer directly. The opinions expressed on Baker Hosts are those of participants appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the firm. For more information about our practices and experience, please visit bakerlaw.com.